my name is Leah Jackson. I am a 19-year-old student at San Diego State University. My family is mainly from Alabama, but my parents are both from Ohio. And then we relocated to Los Angeles when I was 7. So I've been here for over a decade. And I didn't leave Los Angeles until I went to school in San Diego.
I'm Marie Silliman. I'm 20. I also go to SDSU. I was born in England. I'm full Nigerian. My parents were both born and raised in Nigeria. We immigrated here about when I was 5 years old. I've been in California ever since, but I've moved around California about 8 or 9 times. And then I moved to San Diego for school. Sam.
How does your identity fit and not fit into American culture?
So for me at least, I can talk about the way it fits. The politeness of it and the way we speak is very indoctrinated. Like, we very much subscribe to the American way of speaking, of like talking to people, interacting with people. There's a lot of code switching, I know, for both, but like for us at least, it's code switching not just from like Black people, but from like Nigerian people, because it's a whole separate thing. Where I feel like it fits because I'm just seen as like more polite, as like the more polite version of Black, if that makes any sense, just because they think the other version is something else. I always get called different, unique, special, just even though I am also staying, but not for the right reason. The way it doesn't fit, I would just say I do get it now, but when I was younger, I didn't really get a lot of the culture that was presented to me from either side. I had to kind of navigate it myself just because my parents didn't grow up like that. They grew up in Nigeria with a whole different culture. So just learning about Black culture and white culture in America was something I had to just do myself.
Do you want to talk a little more about code switching?
Sure. For me at least, it was a lot easier to code switch. I would say it was harder for my parents just because there is a language barrier and they don't really understand a lot of the things that Americans talk about, or like it's just harder to order food, or it's harder to like keep a conversation going. For me, code switching is just basically raising my pitch, trying to mimic what other people say, the words that they've said. When I was younger, I try to mimic it, the lingo, the language, especially because I moved a lot. For Black people, I would say it's less, I don't code switch as much with Black people, but when I was younger, I did, just because I didn't grow up in Black culture and I was seen as something else if I didn't try to like fit into that narrative. But as I've grown and gotten older, I've, you know, realized I don't need to do that. But it is something that I had to learn from both sides.
Yeah, I would say code switching for me is being purely African-American. Definitely came easy because I grew up in a very predominantly Black space in Cleveland. And I moved here, so when I moved here, I never talked like the way a large majority of non-Black people think we talk. But I definitely was more comfortable talking one way than I was at my school in Burbank, California. So I just kind of got to this point where it just kind of naturally happened. But recently, I definitely don't feel the need to do it as much anymore, just because when I don't care. Am I going to talk to someone that's hiring me the way I talk to my TT? Hey, TT, how you doing? No. As they don't deserve to see me at my most vulnerable. But definitely now it's more of just making myself feel comfortable. You try to talk like I normally talk around non-Black people, and then they start adopting the terminology and start calling me sister and sister.
It's weird.
And queen and girl and all this stuff. So for me, it's more of a level of comfortability for myself when it comes to code switching.
I completely agree. It's honestly interesting how people try to code switch around us.
Yeah.
How they'll try and they try and fit into what their stereotype of us is.
Yeah.
So they try and like change themselves as well. And it doesn't.
Because it's backwards. Like the code switching, the history of it is we went from only like 50 years ago to where the divide between Black America and White America was so intense. You couldn't go to a white place of work and like talk the way you usually, like, they would not hire you. And they legally could say, absolutely not. They more than likely would have said it anyway because mm-hmm. you're Black. But you know what I mean? We had to do these things to integrate. And I think now that we're integrated somewhat, whatever you want to call that, Black people, I feel like as a collective for the most part, feel less of a need, especially Gen Z, less of a need to do it because we're no longer integrating because we don't need to integrate to be, successful people or whatever you want to call it. Like, we're making our own businesses and making our own empires now.
Yeah.
So I hope the code switching slowly starts to die. Of course, it's a place for like everything. And honestly, I feel like it's just a level of comfort. Like, I'm not going to talk to a Jimmy the way I talk to Maria. Like, no.
Exactly. I feel like, especially now with popular culture in Gen Z, a lot of, you know, AAVV, it's very popular now. It's very popularized. People think it's a trend. It's cool. Mm-hmm. It's just
like, AAV is a reason, like, people.
There's a reason for it.
Job. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much deeper than like, you guys are gatekeeping. Maybe we're not gatekeeping.
No. There's like a whole history behind it. I just find that so fascinating how it's kind of flipped now. And how they're trying it because it's cool now, because we've always been cool and they think it's cool now. But yeah.
I haven't even answered how I fit in and how I don't fit in into American society. I would say I fit in and like I great student, you know, get my work done, I go to a good school, like I care about my education, like all those American values, because if you can get an education, education is a great equalizer. So anyone can do anything with education, that's a lie. But in that standard, I would say that I'd fit into American society. I think I would fit into American society and or culture because someone could look at me and be like, oh, she's a representation of the American dream. Like, you got a family that comes from nothing and builds a way up, which the American dream is also something that's not fundamentally true for everybody, but whatever. I think in that way I do fit in, but I would say the ways I don't fit in are many. Definitely I feel like in American culture, being vocal is actually, as much we try to be like we're like the land of the free or whatever, being vocal is not popular, and it's usually put down. You're usually put down if you are vocal, especially about things that are going on in this country. So in that sense, I don't think I've ever fit in. Even when I was kind of younger, I was like, why am I getting bullied, like why and why don't the teachers care, like what's going on, like I'm confused, like in that sense I've been not really integrated and fitting into American culture. And I guess I don't fit into American culture in the sense of like I don't fit into the stereotypes that they have about Black people, like I don't fit into that very small constricted box they've created for us. I'm very tall, like I don't fit into it in any physical sense, mental sense, spiritual sense, like I don't. So in that sense I would say I do not fit into how they perceive us and how small their stereotypes and like their mindset is about us. Very small-minded, they can't really see us being like expansive and multi-dimensional creatures as a collective, you know. And so in that way I definitely don't fit in, and those are the two or three most important ways. There are more, but I don't want to take up too much time.
I actually had a question for Leah about like one of her answers that I thought was really interesting, if we could like for like 2 seconds.
Wind it back.
Of course. When you were responding just to the question about how you do or don't see yourself fitting in into American culture, I noticed that you immediately jumped to like education and like how your role is an like as a student, and then that's how you do fit in, but then also saying that that is the very thing that white people perceive you as, not fitting into Black stereotypes. And so there's kind of that duality. What I wish I could kind of hear more about from both of you.
That is actually very true. So interesting. But yeah, I think growing up in my school, I was always like the only Black student that was in like the APs and like the honors classes and like not all my teachers were passive aggressive, but I definitely had some teachers where you can just kind of tell, like, they expect you to do worse and, like, are, like, surprised when you do well. So I kind of experienced that. And so really early on, I noticed that I didn't fit in because none of my white friends were ever, like, they were never surprised when they would do well, you know what I mean? And they never were receiving condescending energy from a teacher. And that kind of expands into everyday life. It didn't really stop at school, because even like now when you tell like older white people, oh, like, you know, or you someone like I meet them on the street and they say like, oh, blah, blah, I'm from San Diego. Like, oh, you know, like, do you go to school there? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, for real? It's like, yes, I do. Like things like that. And so you kind of get hit with like comments and little snide comments and remarks like that. But then again, on the opposite end of it, it's, then if I'm as a Black person, it's like shocking to them. But then they're like, yay, because education, and like we want everyone to succeed. Well, no, but in America, that American dream, like the goal is always to work your way up to the top. So, and that's really not even my goal, but in that way, I guess I could fit in. But then it's also this like surprise, or, oh, you guys can do that, or you guys are doing this and you guys are going to school and they're surprised by that. Which, I mean, 50 years ago, like, we couldn't go to white school, so it's not, like, I'm not surprised that they are surprised, and it's something that, white people are going to have to get used to, like, the fact that, like, oh, they're not inferior, like, they can exist, and, like, they do, and, like, they can, like, succeed, and, like, do good things, you know what I mean? So, it's definitely a really weird balancing act, but it's something I have to balance, it's just something that you kind of exist within multiple sides of the having great education, so. Okay, well, are you happy for me or what? I'm confused. Yeah.
I do have a further question for both of you, because I think it's interesting to hear, what do you guys think of the American dream?
That's a really interesting question, because my parents did immigrate from England because of the American dream. And I'm not going to lie, like, they're all for it. They're very much like, we work hard, so we deserve to move up. Like, my mom struggled a lot. She was in school. She had like 3 kids at the time. She was in nursing school. Like, she came to America for a nursing program. That's actually how they were able to come here, how they got their green cards. So just from the research that I've done on my own, I don't believe in the American dream. Kind of like the bootstrap theory, like, pull yourself up from your bootstraps, but if you don't have bootstraps, what are you gonna do? So it's just like, but in my personal life, I've seen it in fruition, and I've seen people work as hard as they have to get half as far as someone else that I know. So I do believe it's a motivating factor for immigrants. It's a motivating thing. Do I believe in its like legitimacy? No, not really. But I do see how it can propel people to come here and propel people to work their asses off for their families and to get where they want to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I feel like it is definitely something that can be put in theory. Like, this does not always work. This is not a fact. The American dream does not always work out the way they want it to. You know what I mean? I personally, I guess I fit into that category. I think any Black person, like, if you are still here today, you have made it in this country, you've made it in this world. Like, that's an accomplishment within itself. But definitely, I am a middle class Black person, so I have my privilege when it comes to money, and I can see in a way how that, I don't know if that was really a factor with my parents, because I agree with Maria. I think it's more of like an immigrant thing. So I usually only hear about it and see it most talked about when it comes to immigrants moving here. But when it comes to Americans, they're already here. Personally, I see the system and I see how they treat people like me and other marginalized groups. And it's like, I understand that it's a thing to attract immigrants, but like, here, like, what's the American dream for like people here? And I feel like that's a little warped, and it's definitely, as Maria said, not true. And it's very similar to the bootstrap theory, that if you can just pick yourself up, you can do it. But not everyone has the resources and tools to pick themselves up from that's thrown at them and that they live through. Yeah. So it's a little bogus to me, but I agree with Mia, it can be very motivating, and that's a beautiful thing. If it gets you somewhere and you want to believe in the American dream, but I think with many things, Americans need to stop generalizing it as if it could apply to everybody.
Everybody, exactly. Yeah, because it cannot.
It cannot. Because it can't. Yeah.
Right. That was amazing. Thank you for sharing. Moving on to our next question, which is a very multi-layered question. So answer to your own discretion and whatever you're feeling like you're there. That question being, what has been your experience slash relationship with Eurocentric beauty standards and kind of those being set as the norm?
did you see me look into the abyss that is my childhood? Like, did you see me look down? Like, did you see me?
That is a question.
What a question. Can I go first? I'll go first. I'll let you laugh a little bit longer. To answer your question, I would say that my experience with European standards are
you gotta mute, Maria.
I'm not laughing. It's just like, because we're, me and Lee are such good friends. Yeah. We've talked all, like.
Yeah, we've talked about all this. But,
right. Audience, all friends.
Yes.
But I would say my experience with the European beauty standards have not been a very healthy one. I think growing up, it was definitely like this dramatic shift from when I was in Cleveland, where I was one of thousands of Black girls and Black boys in my school and non-gender conforming children in my school, okay, preach, and other people that looked just like me. And then I moved to this space where I was maybe one of like three or four Black students in my classes and in spaces. And so you naturally are, one, gonna stand out, and sometimes you don't stand out for good reasons. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, it's like, no, they shun you, or like they kind of make you an outcast. Just naturally, because you're different. And so as a child, as most children, you internalize things. So I think growing up, it was just me thinking that this was the reason I was being treated that way. And it technically was, but it was not, I couldn't discern that it was this, but it wasn't like there was something wrong with it. You know what I mean? And because you're a child, like, I just kind of came to this conclusion like 3 years ago. So, it was just a lot of internalizing and thinking that like this was what was making me ugly and this was the problem. And I really, I did not like being dark, because I could see like the difference. Yes, like their colors didn't exist, like the difference between how like my light skinned friends and like I was, me and my dark skin friends were treated. And it was just definitely like they're closer to European standards of beauty. So of course they're just gonna be more widely accepted. And no shade to them. I don't like, that's not a bad thing on their part, like, you know, but I definitely noticed it pretty young. So it wasn't healthy. It definitely was just a lot of comparing growing up, and that's been my biggest problem pretty much my whole life, just comparing myself to anyone else and comparing myself to people that I thought were above me. And it also didn't help that, like, as any Gen Z, I think we consumed a lot of media growing up, and I thankfully was watching like BET and like TV1 and all those channels because my parents had cable. But if I would have just watched like Disney, Nick, and Cartoon Network, and like ABC, I wouldn't have seen myself represented. And I think me now would be in a way worse condition when it comes to my skin color, because I saw Blackness somewhat celebrated from the 90s and like early 2000s television. So that was honestly a saving grace, because without that, the media I was consuming outside of like my Black TV shows and movies, I was not seen. I was not seen or heard. And that kind of makes you think, well, am I valuable? Like, am I worthy of being seen or heard? Like, why am I not being seen? And why is everyone else being seen? Not everyone else, but why are people that do not have the same complexion as me being seen and celebrated? So it was hard. It was annoying, but we got through it. Thankfully, we came to our senses. You know, I realized this was never the problem. The problem was much deep rooted than childhood me could have ever understood. So I'll let Maria go, because I will go back and forth because I have more to say, but you can go.
For me, it's actually very different. I never even like felt, I never felt pretty, but it wasn't like a problem for me. I was a really awkward kid. I was very naive, but I'm realizing that I was always really sexualized by my peers, just because I do have a big booty, I have like, big lips, I'm a dancer, so that was always a thing. People would always like grab my butt, people would always just like, you know, call me like big Black girl. It was like, I was very sexualized in certain aspects and ways, but I was never liked by anyone. No one ever wanted to date me, hold my hand. Everyone could just like see me shake my butt. So I didn't realize that for a very long time, how, you know, bad that is. But it was never, I I never saw any of that, like BET, I never saw Black representation just because my parents didn't grow up with that and I didn't have any outlet for that. When I came to America, I was always the only Black girl and I was into things like show choir and like band and, you know, all the nerdy things. So I do remember just, I remember feeling like, oh, I'm just not pretty. That's just, that's just that. I have other talents. I can do other things. I'm just not pretty. Like, people just won't like me. And that was because I was Black. I've realized now, but I don't know. It wasn't, at least personally, I know this isn't for everyone. It wasn't something I focused on too much until I got older. It started to affect me more when I was like 16, 17, 18, because that's when, you know, the hormones start kicking in and you're just like, oh, I like people. Why aren't they still liking me back? Because no one liked me back still. I was, you know, still high school. People are dumb and stupid and childish and racist because of a racist system. And that's when I started to realize, oh, I'm being sexualized all the time. Oh, everyone wants to touch my butt. Oh, everyone wants to see me twerk. Oh, everyone wants to, you know, just like use me as a prop rather than seeing me as a person who actually maybe would like to be loved. But I would say it hasn't been something I couldn't take. You know what I mean? I still had a lot of love in my own personal life. It's just something I realized later on that was what was going on.
Yeah, I definitely disagree. It heavily affected my life. It was a problem. I remember I never actually, surprisingly, I know I do, when I was younger, I wanted to be white, but I think I came to a compromise in like my 13-year-old self. I was like, I just want to be light skin. Like, I just want lighter skin. Like, that would just make me so much happier. That would make me feel so much better. And I remember this day so vividly. I don't know what had happened and why I was so mad at my skin that day, but I was like, in my head, just thinking, I had seen like a picture of like children or something like that. And I was like, I can't marry like a Black person. Like, I can't like have a daughter that's dark. I can't do that to her. And like, I don't want a daughter that's dark. And I remember being so like, I have to marry like a white person. Like, I have to marry a white man. Like, 13, coming to this like horrible
coming to this conclusion.
I was like, I remember being like, I'm struggling. And the gross part was like, I didn't want to do it to her, but it was like, I wanted my daughter to be beautiful. And so I didn't think that having dark skin would be beautiful. So I was just, I have to find someone that we can make caramel babies with. Like, that's just the compromise that we have to come to. And I remember that very vividly from when I was 13 or 12. And so it just kind of spirals. It went in and out. I definitely think getting to high school really helped me because we started like a Black student union at our school. And so we had a space every Tuesday or Wednesday where we could come and like talk about Black issues and just be in a room full of Black people, which was really nice and really helped me. But up until that point, it was just, I also just care a lot about people's perceptions of me, and people, like, boys didn't like me, and that was a problem. Because I was like, when I go to Bible class, like, I'm pretty, like, I was so confused, like, man, Bible class, I go to Bible class with all the people, and they call me pretty girl Ashley all my life. I was so confused. I was like, why am I not cute in these spaces too? And the ultimate reason was my skin color, but that's not my fault. That's something that you have to come to terms with as you get older. Like, that's the America's race, yes, society's fault, not mine. And I want to say this because people think, well, you know, thinking about someone's skin color from like an aesthetic point of view is not racist. Like, if you just think like darker skin is not as pretty, it's not racist. But racism is simply finding another race superior than another. So that can take form in hair texture, that can take form in skin color, that can take form in slang and vernacular. Like, that takes on so many forms. I wanted to say that because, you know, some people actually think that's racist or colorist.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up colorism, just because growing up, my older sister was always darker than me. Mm-hmm. And my mom would always be like, oh, you need to be lighter. Like, you need to, she bought us both like lightening creams. We would do like treatments and stuff, just because, you know, I haven't talked to her about this, but I'm realizing now it's probably because she knows that darker people are treated worse in America. Yeah. That's just what it is. And I feel like I definitely saw the toll it took on my sister, because she is a lot darker than me. And I don't think she felt pretty either. but it was just something that like she had to deal with. Like she had to like use lightening cream. She felt like she had to do all these things until she like came to her senses and like stopped. But right. It's just, I find it so interesting because I know a lot of immigrants will put that on their children. They'll like
make it easier for them.
Make it easier, exactly. Well, make it easier for them. And it's like it's not like malicious or anything, but she just knew that it would be harder, and it is harder. And I don't think I completely agree, Leah. It's like not their fault at all, but it's something that's not really talked about, and it's something that is so. If you're dark, it's something that is so visible. Like it is so visible to you in any space, any category, in classes, in my dance crew. Like it's even visible today for me, at least. Just like I can totally see how people treat light-skinned people different from me. It's the way they speak. It's how they interact with them. It's how they talk about them being pretty. It's so different. It really is. If you're darker, you can see it so much clearer than pretty much anyone else can, because you're pushed up right against it. So yeah, I did really notice that as well.
Yeah. I wanted to add a baby follow-up question. So
baby one.
This is a big one because we all, like, I think especially growing up, felt like shitty and internalized a lot of like negative, just all of those voices and all of those expectations, and that we like had absolutely no option to live up to, and it felt like it was our fault or our responsibility. So when did you start to realize that it wasn't your fault and responsibility, and start to kind of like reclaim your Blackness and your own identity for yourself, and figure out what your Blackness meant for you as an individual?
Okay, if I'm honest,
she's honest.
If I'm honest, which I am. If I'm honest with myself, I love to say it happened sooner than what I'm about to say, but it didn't. I did not come to terms with myself and like really dive deep and ask those uncomfortable questions and really consider what had happened to me as a child and how it has shaped me into who I was today and how I kind of still do not like being Black until like a year ago, my freshman year of college, when I left. Because long story short, I went from being a child, never validated, blah blah blah, then I found a white boyfriend. I was like, oh my god, like he loves me, and then I went bad. But then I in turn like, oh my god, a white person likes me, so then now I must be pretty. You know what I mean? Like that was kind of where I was when I was 16. And so truly, I didn't start loving, one, just being Black, which I love now so much, and I would never want to be anything else. But I didn't even realize how much internalized racism and colorism that was living within me until my freshman year of college, which was only a year ago, like 2019, 2020. That's really this year, and I'm, you know, COVID's horrible, and I'm so sorry some people have lost their families and family members and friends, but it's definitely given me the space to do that work and to be honest with myself. And that just helps me, one, be a better person, Black person, woman. Like that helps me be so many things and better myself if I'm just honest with myself. So yeah, it was really only a year ago.
Can you repeat the question?
Just when did you start to notice that realize that kind of the responsibility or the feelings of being at fault for being Black or not being able to meet like Eurocentric beauty standards or white beauty standards, it wasn't your responsibility? And when did you start to notice that, or like when did you start to reclaim your own Black identity and your Blackness for yourself and figure out what your Blackness meant for you as an individual?
Okay, this is kind of connected to beauty standards, but it's also kind of connected to like me having to grow up in a culture that I was not like privy to. First of all, I was very blessed to have a lot of really, really great friends around me, Black or not. For most of my time, Gigi, she's one of the, you know, presenters here. She's been my best friend since like the eighth grade. And I've always had really, really great friends, always be like, they're wrong, you're right. Like, they're stupid, you're pretty. Like, don't worry about it. But I would say I came to the realization when I was about maybe like 16 or 17. It wasn't even like a realization, like I'm the most beautiful girl in the world. It's more just like, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm Black. Like, that's all, like, I'm just Black. If that's if that means I'm not going to get a boyfriend, that means I'm not going to get a boyfriend. If that means no one's going to like me, that means no one's going to like me. Like, I feel like it's because from the get-go, I was always seen as, like, I was always seen as weird to begin with. I was always called Oreo. I was always, because I was really into the Roxy and Paramore, I was always seen as whitewashed. I was always seen as too black, not black enough. So it's kind of just, like, when you're thrown against that many walls, you're just, like,
we just out.
What am I supposed to do, really? Like, what am I supposed to do? So it's just, like, I was always blessed to have reinforcements around me, always telling me how amazing I am. And also, I just had to, like, I was too busy having fun with my friends and dancing and moving around and meeting new people and meeting the people that are going to be my life for the rest of my life. I was too busy. Sure, could I have a mental breakdown once in a while? Absolutely, I'm human. But I feel like I came to the realization when I was, like, around 16-ish, just like, this is something that's happening. It's not my fault. Like, so if that dude doesn't like me, that dude doesn't like me. I'm gonna go choreograph with my friend.
My mantra. This has been my new. Not even. The thing that's helped me is we often make people's opinions and perceptions and how they feel about us like our business. But yeah. That's not our. If someone is attractive, that does not mean that you need to try to morph yourself to. Force them to, baby. That is their business. That is their business. So if I would have heard that at 12, I would be Billie Eilish right now. Like,
so true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I made it my business. Made myself. Did things to try to be more pleasing. I was like, okay, if my skin's there, then what I did was like try to over-sexualize myself. As like a child, so like I would like want like bigger boots, like I would like wear like two bras. Lord, not me admitting this on camera. Yeah, to like just try to get some kind of like validation when it comes to the way I looked. So yeah, it's only business though.
I now know
that it is not my business how people think, feel, or view me. You know?
What is sad though is that I truly believed in my heart that I might never find love. But that's just something that I accepted. I truly accepted it. I was truly just like, okay.
Not kidding. Like she was just like, it's just not like gonna happen.
It's
like
just not gonna happen for me. It's not happening for me.
I have a great career. I'm just like, I just won't have.
Yeah, I just won't have love in my life. Like I'll have love with my friends, but I did accept that at one point in my life. It was just something that was just gonna happen, and that's that's obviously because I was black. I was weird. But now I realize that's not true. It's not true. But I do, I have to really like attest to the people in my life because they made my childhood experience, what I can remember of it. That's a whole nother story. They made it so much, they just made it so much more, like they made it joyful. You know what I mean? Like I had a joyful experience in middle school and high school because of the people around me. And they didn't, they didn't think I was different because I was black, because I liked Paramore, because I was in show choir, because I was weird. Like, they found it, because they were all weird too. We were just a band of weird people. It was really great. I'm really appreciative of it. A lot of people, I'm sorry, I'm choking. Because a lot of people truly didn't have that, and that's the shitty part, so. Shout out to all y'all. Seriously. Shout out to all y'all.
If we're done with this question, we can move on to the next question, which I'm very excited for. You guys founded the Make Their Pockets Hurt campaign. So why did you start it? And what was your experience with going viral?
Well, we originally started it. Me and Marie were both like in distress.
Distress.
That was not the first shooting I'd ever seen. That was not the first one I'd ever seen. That was not the first act of police brutality I'd ever seen. And not the first one that made me emotional. But because it was COVID and we were in quarantine, it was the first time that I was able to like actually process it and see what was actually happening, what had been happening before. You know, like you see it and then you go to your best friend's house the next day. And then, it's normal. But I realized how it wasn't normal. And so we were just kind of thinking about ways this problem could be solved and ways we could help And so we came up with Make Their Pockets Hurt. We, you know, thought of boycotting because we know that's what our ancestors did in the past, back in the first civil rights movement, and they boycott. And that's, these white folks, one thing they do care about is the moolah. Everything is about the money. So when you realize that, and a lot of the police system, whatever they want to say about it, is not about keeping the streets safe, it's about the money. So yeah. And so we thought, at first we wanted a huge like turnout every 19th of the month. We're like, millions of thousands of people wouldn't spend money. But as the movement continued, we decided to make it more about putting money into and channeling money into Black-owned businesses. Because in my liberation work, for me personally, I always think it's more beneficial to uplift like the Black community and Black people, while also holding them accountable and doing things and doing work to destroy these structures that have been in place, that have been put in place. So, but I also don't think it's all about this destroying them if the community is not being uplifted and if there's no money being funded into our communities. So that's really where the origin of it, and that's what it became over time. And going viral was definitely interesting. It was, I was just happy that our word was getting out there and that we were educating people on different topics that most of them, thousands of people had never heard of, like redlining and what the Bootstrap Theory was and that there was a racial wealth gap, things that you're not gonna learn in school and you might not even learn in college unless you take some kind of ethnic studies course. So it felt really nice, and I was really honored to be able to be a part of something that was educating people on like a you know, widespread level. But definitely going viral also showed me how the movement does do this. You know what I mean? Like, it showed me truly how it has been, how it can no longer be where you see it happen and then you are upset for a couple of days and then it moves on, how allyship works that way as well, how they're very for the cause for the first couple of weeks or so, and then it kind of dies off because we were spurting, we were growing so much, and then, you know, George Floyd had been dead for a month or so, or like 2 months, and then it kind of started to trickle off. And so that only kind of inspired me to, one, for me to stay pretty active. It's traumatizing for me to see it and traumatizing for me to be aware of what's happening, but it's also, I would rather be affected by it than numb. So it kind of forces me to stay involved because I don't want to be that, especially with my own community. So that was my experience going viral. I was very blessed and honored to be able to share information. My TikTok is still there. Like, people can still go find and watch those videos. And that was cool for me to do. Definitely was like hard sometimes though, just like putting so many like traumatizing things from our history and like things that are still affecting us today. It got to the point where I couldn't like do it every day like I was doing during the summertime, just for like my own mental health. It was a lot, but the experience was great, and I'm still do not regret anything about it, and I love doing it. It was wonderful. No,
just do it.
No, no, yes, no, she's recording it. My father,
Victor Jackson. That was lovely. I just like to say. For me, I think it was just like me and Leah would just talk every day, and then we just end up crying about, you know, something to do with it. And then finally we were just like, we can't just keep crying. Like, we just got to the point where we were just so upset, like truly, because we were finding out so much. We were doing our own research, we were looking into things, we were figuring out stuff about our own lives that were so important. A lot, what people don't really understand is that when Black people are confronted with such a traumatizing thing, it forces them to look at what trauma has been placed in their own lives, which is even more traumatizing. So it was just like, we had to deal with this, and we had to be like, oh yeah, we were Black as kids and like we weren't treated right, and like, oh yeah, we're Black now, we're not treated right, and oh yeah, all of this happening to what our ancestors, like all of, not mine, but Leah was going through so much, truly. Like, Leah was going through so much. She so strong. I don't even know how she did Make Their Pockets Hurt, to be quite honest, but it was just, you have it forces you to dig into your past even when you don't want to. So I think we just got so fed up with having to do that every day, and like looking at the news, you can't escape from the news because it's always there, everyone's posting about it, people that you know are racist, people that you know are racist and said racist things are trying to act like they're not. It was just something that we had to occupy ourselves, but we wanted to occupy our time with something that would help, if not for the public, for us, because honestly it was like our safe, at least for me, it was like our my saving grace. Like, we actually felt like we could do something. We felt like we were learning a lot, that we couldn't possibly educate people. We were finding all these Black businesses that we didn't even know about. It was something for us to spend our time on and to just like dive into the Black world that I've never done, and I'm sure Leah has been in, but like we just got to be in it more and got to really affirm ourselves more and really appreciate being Black even more. So that was just a really beautiful thing. I do agree that the whole process really taught you a lot about movements and like allyship and how it does dip and how it's kind of like, it's kind of heartbreaking to like, because once you, when you do go viral, you do see all the hate that's out there. You do see how people are trying to argue with literal facts that we've fact-checked over and over again, like literal facts, and they try to tell you you're wrong. And it's just like kind of amazing how people, how different people are and how many views are in the world and what is conceived as right and wrong. And it's something that we had to confront firsthand while being in quarantine, while dealing with the shooting, while dealing with all the people that are dying. It was just something that we had to just push against, which was taking a really big mental toll. And that's honestly how, I don't know if this is how, but me and Leah, we talked about this topic a lot, how like she grew up and how I grew up. I don't know if this sparked from that or before we used to talk about it. I'm not really sure, but
I don't know where you're going with this. Keep talking.
Oh, like we would just talk about how like, you being Black is different from me, being Black, how your parents are taking this, how my parents are taking this. Do you know what I mean? We would just talk about that kind of stuff and have these conversations ourselves, just because we were basically forced to. Like, we had to. It was all that was on our minds. Like, what else are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
Like, there's like, this is all we're going to talk about. So I think it was such a great learning experience for both of us in many different ways. And I think it really propelled our personal growth as people and as Black women. It really propelled our love for each other and ourselves, which was like, I feel like it's the best thing that could have come out of it. So
yeah. Is there an adult question?
I don't know. Yeah.
We can move on to the next question. That was, you guys answered that really, really broadly and amazingly, so thank you for sharing. So our last question, which was just what is your relationship with your family group and whatever that means to you on a personal level, if you're willing to share.
My family group is actually so interesting being Black, because when I see Blackness, like I'll always say, I'll say like, look at us, like that's us, like that's my family, that's our community. And I think because we've been through such this, we've been through such a specific experience, and so as divided as we are, we are still somewhat united and natural communal people. Like that comes to African people, like of the entire diaspora, very easily. We're naturally communal. Individualism was not ours. That is some European stuff. We weren't that. That was not how our societies were run. But I would say, knowing my family roots, I know actually a lot about my ancestry, which is really nice. I'm from Alabama. I have one family member whose family was like from Kentucky, but like everyone else is Alabama, which is actually, growing up, I knew that. And Alabama was just there. You can't really rate slavery if it was worse in one place and worse in another, but the stories from Alabama are horrific. And like knowing that that's where like my people come from growing up was just a lot. And I never really thought about it. I never really thought about like slavery as a child, because I wasn't learning about it in school. Like they taught it, like it was like this like little mistake, little bump in the road that America went through. Now we're so good. Like that's how it was taught to me, so I never really thought about it. But I have been able to trace my ancestry. I found one line. I found like my great great grandfather's family, and I was able to trace them back through census work and collections to slavery. So I've been able to connect one person to slavery because they were born in 1845, and on their sheets, like it says farm laborer. Like that's what it says on the census. Yeah. But I looked up like the county, like that was it was Alabama, like they were enslaved. And so I've been able to tie it back to slavery, but I'm blessed to know a lot about my ancestry that only motivates me. It's actually no longer traumatizing for me to look back on my ancestral roots or look back on Black history either, because it's just incredible. Like, how do we just keep winning? Like, how do we just like beating them? Like, how do we keep like growing and evolving and becoming better people? It's insane. So now it's just really empowering. I love learning things. It no longer, I used to just have to like turn the phone off, right? Or just like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to like have to dive deep and like think about who I come from. But it just is very empowering to know. So yeah.
I would just like to say watching this journey has been amazing. Aww. She's really grown as a very, very strong person, and it's just been really cool to watch. Anyway, I am not connected to slavery. None of my family were slaves. All my family is in Nigeria. So I know exactly where I come from, which is a whole different concept, and it's a blessing that I have. My family is Nigerian, from Kora State and somewhere else, I don't remember, sorry dad. And the way I'm connected to my roots is mainly culturally. I grew up in a Nigerian household. I grew up in a Nigerian church. I grew up in a Celestial Christian Nigerian church, which is different from European Christianity. It was just always something that I had in my house. It was because my parents don't subscribe to this culture. They don't. They're not for it. They're not about it. They're Nigerians. So like growing up with that duality was also something that made me very weird. I know all the food. I know the language a little bit. My parents speak Yoruba. I have your Nigerian names. I go to a Nigerian church where everyone is Nigerian. Literally everybody is Black, everyone's Nigerian. So knowing exactly where I come from and the traditions and values of that place and seeing how it clashes with American and European traditions and values has been something that I've had to just navigate for myself, what I believe in. Knowing my culture is very beautiful, but there are faults obviously to every culture. There are some discussions that I don't agree with, but I didn't realize this when I was younger. When I was younger, I just wanted to be like American. It was so much easier. I went to an American school. I grew up in America. When I told people, yeah, I can't hang out, I have to go to church for, and Lee also had this too, but when I had to go to church for 8 hours, I'm sorry, I can't hang out. Like, I can't do this because my Nigerian parents told me I can't. That's the reason. Like, it's a different way of growing up. I'm sure I feel like that's the same way for any immigrant family, no matter where you come from. It's just like you're dealing with whatever culture that they came from and the culture that you're presented with from growing up here, and you just kind of mix and mingle it. But how connected am I to my roots? I think I'm pretty connected. I know all about the culture, the food, where I come from, my family. I've talked to them. They're in Nigeria. I've video-faced them. I know who I come from, but I've never been to Nigeria. I don't subscribe to everything Nigerian tradition has to offer. I am a free thinker. Thank you very much. I've learned a lot about a lot of things, and I do feel very blessed and really, really appreciate knowing my culture. And I did it when I was a kid. So that's just something that I've really learned to appreciate, because a lot of people don't have that. And it's just really nice to have a different perspective, basically, of life. Because my parents have a completely different perspective. Yes?
I realized I didn't really answer the question. I answered the question of how I'm connected, or like if I am, but not in the ways I'm connected to my family roots. Yeah. I'll just dumb it down to like three things. I would say music really connects me. I feel like music has been honestly one of African American saving grace, like just getting through and surviving what we've been through in this country. And so music definitely connects me to my family, listening to blues, listening to as far back as I can go to what they're listening to. And I've been listening to African music as well, because I know that my history did not begin with slavery. And I think also religion. I went to a Bible class where you had to go to Bible class 4 days a week. and you cannot miss Bible class or 3 to 4. But that was my saving grace, actually, because when I went to school, it was in a predominantly white space, and I would go there. The white people would be the rare people. There were white people, but it was like 600 black people and like 20 white people, you know what I mean? And so that really connected me, and there were 600 people that I was able to connect to, and they were able to kind of guide me through being black. And they were all in LA too, so they could navigate this and help me with what they learned from my aunties and uncles to my cousins, who are not my aunts and uncles and cousins, but my parents' friends. Therefore, they are my aunties and uncles. Yes. But yeah, that really helped me. And I think one thing black people, sadly, through a lot of stuff, have become slightly disconnected from like their ancestry and African traditional religion. But I think one thing that connects us all is that tribalism. Like, as I was saying earlier, we're naturally communal people. And so it's not hard for us to see ourselves in each other. It's not hard for us to like come together. Like, when Black America goes through these things, we have to see it. For the most part, as a collective, we are all like on a similar page. Like, we all see that there's a problem, and we all feel that community because there's the opposition. There's white folks that like understand the problem, and there's also a mass of white folks that are just like, and like, what? So we have to unite, because we know that we've been under such an oppressive force, and we still are. And so I think Black people are naturally communal, and community is not something that comes hard to us. And I think that connects us to our ancestry, because in my Africana studies class, I learned that the Black family was one of the only things that held slavery together. Like, it was one of the few things that helped us preserve our culture, was the fact that we had a family unit, somewhat, in a sense. So that communalism that still was not, they still tried to kick it out of us and kill it out of us, and it didn't work. So I think that's just very integrated into our history and our ancestry. Yeah, that's how I'm connected to my roots.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought, sorry, I don't know if you guys wanted to chime in, but I want to chime in. I'm glad you brought up music, because we have talked about this, how that's like part of my like tinge of disconnect I have to Black culture, because I didn't grow up with all those tunes. I don't know why I just said tunes. I'm so sorry. Can we cut that out? We can't. I'm going to keep going. I didn't grow up listening to that, and that was kind of one of the things that made me weird, because my parents only played Nigerian music. And like, again, with the whole racism in America thing, I don't know, we haven't talked about this, but did your parents talk to you about it, Leah?
No. Well, if they did, I so don't remember, but there was never really a situation in which they did. I don't remember. I this girl called me a monkey once, and it was a whole debacle. She got suspended. It was bad. And I remember my mom gave me some sort of talk, or maybe it was my father, about, you know, like, don't listen to that. You're beautiful the way you are. But when it came to like dealing with racism, but honestly, I just always, my parents are very strong people, and I've always felt like I don't want to be weak. So I don't think I never went to them with any question.
I completely agree.
I see my black parents make money, like, they are so like accomplished. If they can do this and they're black too, like, I can't go complain about like my school problems, you know what I mean? So, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
With you?
No, they never talk about it. So I was going to talk about, I feel like, at least what I've witnessed in my own community, Nigeria, people, not just immigrants, but people who grew up in Nigeria, like, they don't really like, they absolutely care, and they absolutely are like, how are they so like, but the thing is, the difference is how they go like, how are they still treating them like this? The keyword is them. How is it treating them like this? Because they really don't mess with this culture. Like, they are Nigerians just living in this land, from what I've experienced. And it's just like, it's like somewhat of a, you can see, like, my mom has obviously cried to George Floyd. Like, they care, but it's just like a
slight. It's a diaspora, like I'm telling you, Nigerians culture, African American culture, Ghanaian culture, Black people that are in France, like, that's why these diasporas come so easily, even though they're not created by us. We know why they're there, but you know what I mean? It's because the cultures are freaking different.
The cultures are different.
Different demographics of people. I think in the coming years, like the next rest of the 21st century, we're definitely going to see Black people realizing like, oh, no matter where we are at, they kind of as a collective all view us in the same way. Like it's us against that oppression, and it's not just African-American oppression, because if they could go back to Africa and do mess up some ish, they would do it again. Like, let's just be real. So it's a collective thing. And I don't think we as a whole realize that now, but I believe we will, because we have to. Because we have to, yeah, have to actually like unite and realize it's us against, I don't like saying again, it's us against, it's us against them, low key, you know?
My parents still like teach us, like, I have a little brother and he's 12 years old. My parents are still always like, no, you can't go outside at night. No, you can't ride your skateboard past 5 p.m. No, you can't wear that hoodie outside. So it's like, we were still taught, like, my parents won't let my brother wear hoodie, like hoodies up. Because obviously, you know, like, you know why. Like, it's not like they're blind to the situation, but they're not, they're occupied with their own culture. I'm going to say that. They're occupied with their own culture. They absolutely know what's going on, and they absolutely will keep their children safe from what's going on. But it was never talked about in my household. It's being talked about more just because I do have a brother now. I think because when they had all girls, they're like, oh, it's a little better. They're girls. Like, we can, you know, it's a little better, but now we have a boy and he's like a tall boy and he's like big, and now they're like being really, really protective, and I am too. Honestly, it quite frightens me, especially when everything happened. No, we wouldn't let him out of the house. Like, no, you're not leaving the house. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's been interesting to see that shift for them, because I think it just became even more real for them as well. Because they're raising a son and they saw it firsthand, and like they were also confronted by it. It was also something that they had to deal with, also something my church had to deal with, because it was never talked about. Because my parents have lived through many Black murders. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've been here for a long time. They happen like every fucking, I'm so sorry. They happen like every year. But it's something that they're dealing with as well. And it's just not a nice change, obviously, but it's like a safer change and something that they're gonna reconcile with as well.
Because you do not want, you sadly, you just, ignorance is bliss, but you can't raise ignorant. You can't
raise a 13-year-old son.
Yeah, you
can't. A Black son, yeah. A tall 13-year-old Black son, like, in ignorance in America.
Protecting the method, it doesn't help. Yeah. You want to traumatize them, and at three, be like, show them videos, like, no, they're,
yeah, exactly,
but you know what I mean, like, you can't let your Black children be ignorant, because there's a chance that that ignorance will be their downfall, you know.
And luckily they're not. I'm really proud of, like, my little sister, like, thinks she's so pretty. That's like something I never would have dreamed about having when I was 9 years old. She like loves herself, and it's really nice to see. My brother, he's weird, but like, he's like, he doesn't hate himself either. Like, my little siblings don't hate themselves. And that's just so nice to see, like, that they really do love themselves. Like, they respect themselves. Like, they have, like, goals. They have, like, aspirations and goals. And, like, they're going to make them. So it's just really nice to see the next generation actually, like, being happy with who they are in regards to, like, their skin color and where they come from.
Aww. I'll cry.
What about you?
Black experience.
Mackenzie should probably say something. Yeah.
Black experience.
What are you? Are you an immigrant? What, explain.
African American, as I identify. I unfortunately don't have like a ton of roots to like my ancestors. Like, I legit don't know, which has been like not like a point of contention for me, but just in terms of like, I don't know, feeling like you have to reclaim something, but not knowing where your reclamation comes from, it makes it a bit of a journey.
It makes it harder. Yeah. Harder. It's a harder journey.
Trying to pull a lot of just like concrete self-love and like validation, but you don't like, don't know where it's coming from. So you're just like pulling from thin air, and you're like, all right, I guess this fits.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm so fine. But I relate to a lot of like both of your experiences that you talked about, just in the sense of not feeling like is I when Aaliyah said that she was 18, right around the time she started to feel, I don't know, like really, really comfy in your Black skin, it was the same for me. And I actually don't think that's really rare. I know it feels late, but I don't think it's rare at all for Black women. Talking to my mom, she said, again, I didn't feel genuinely pretty for the first time until I was 18 and I went to college. And same thing for me. And I didn't, like Marie and I went to high school together for the first time. There's a lot of,
white people.
a lot meant well and others, didn't. You know, and so just kind of navigating your own like self-image and again, being called like an Oreo because you like Paramore and Fall Out Boy. And I don't know, it was confusing and it's still confusing. I'm not entirely like, you know, some days are a lot harder than others, and it's, you know, it's hard being Black and unabashedly and unapologetically Black is really, really hard. And I think you spend the majority of your life up until, you know, a couple years ago thinking like I'm a problem and I don't know why, and nobody really like talked to you, like sat you down as a kid and said, hey, so you're, people are gonna hate you and you're not gonna really be able to do anything about that. It's not your fault, but you know, and so you kind of come to that conclusion on your own, and then you're just like, well, how am I supposed to not be affected by other people's perceptions of me when for a lot of the time we're told like that's what determines your value? And so unlearning that is a lot, but thankfully, again, I live in Oregon right now, so there's not a ton of Black people here either, but the few Black people who are here are kind of amazing, and so they've helped me definitely feel more a little bit grounded and solid in my identity. And so I'm very, very thankful for that.
Amazing.
I would say being Black is definitely so much unlearning. I think that's the perfect word to describe it, because you, as a child, your children's brains are the most susceptible generation. So you learn these things, you internalize these things, and they just become part of your regular being. So when you get older, you have to unlearn, like you have to decolonize, you know what I mean? To be your best self, or else you're just always going to try to be who they want you to be.
And I still find myself like, I agree, like it's a whole process. Like I, even today, I work at this place called Chipotle. And I still,
a small business.
I don't know if you've heard of her, but I still find myself in racial encounters, just feeling stuck and not knowing what to do. And it's very hard to be unapologetically Black. I think that's a really good way to say it. It is very hard because, yeah, we've made so much growth as a society, but you're still placed in like a hard, it's still hard because I don't want to get fired if I call someone out for being racist. I don't want to get fired from my job. It's easy to say, I don't care. I'm Black and I don't care. But like, you know, people's livelihoods depend on how much they can code switch. People's livelihoods depend on how much we can blend in. And so the unlearning process is a really long one. And some people don't have the luxury of fully, I don't know. I feel like some people don't have the luxury of fully being able to do that because they're in a work, they're working. And they're working in America. You know what I mean?
In like American spaces, like if nothing's ever addressed.
Yeah.
Like how are you gonna make progress? And so many Black people exactly. Like don't even know how to describe this ish. Like, you don't even know where to really start, and you don't really know what to say. And I'm thankful that I have people like Maria and people like you guys that like are willing to have those conversations. And I'd be like, oh, well, you know, like we not slaves no more. Like, no,
yeah.
There are still problems. Yeah, I've never, I'm not saying that's something that Black people like to say. I'm not saying that about us. I'm just saying it's also talking to white people. They're also like, well, you guys aren't slaves anymore. And I've heard that a lot. So if you're in that kind of environment, how the heck
which just shows that they don't know what slavery is. Like
they don't know what the Black experience has been. And
exactly,
you only get an American education, you're not gonna know.
You don't know the literal like
we would know that it still affects us today. Like that kind of thing doesn't just like disappear
yeah
and like go away, you know.
It's pretty crazy, but
the American Empire is self-destructing. Aren't we excited? I know I'm excited. God damn it.
Yeah. Are we through with the interview section?
Yeah, no, I think we are.
Say fini.
Bye everyone.
Bye. Like and subscribe.